Good morning and welcome to The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
Good. Julie, today we have a very special show. We are, if you're listening to this, pre-recording this show, but we have the opportunity to interview a couple young women who are outstanding in their field in the hiking community and are fresh off the Bonner's Ferry stop on the Pacific Northwest Trail. So we welcome to the studio today Liz Snorkel-Thomas and Naomi.
Good morning. Hi there.
Okay, and so that was Naomi and Liz, and thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your time, and our folks want to hear a lot about your adventure. We have followers who really enjoy the adventures available in our area, but first, tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and how you've come to be the hikers you are. And Liz, let's start with you.
Sure. Thanks, Phil. So I have been long-distance hiking for about a decade. I started with the Tahoe Rim Trail and went on to hike the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail, which are referred to as the Triple Crown of Hiking. And since then, I've gone on to hike many other long-distance trails, including a handful of urban hikes, 200-plus mile hikes, all within city limits.
I think there's a whole show for us sometime in the future on a visit for you, just to tell us about your urban adventures. But we're here today a little bit to hear about the Pacific Northwest Trail, and we'll get to that in a moment. Naomi, tell us a little bit about your hiking resume.
So my first long-distance hike was in 2009, was Pacific Crest Trail, and I also have gone on to do the Triple Crown, the Appalachian Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. And I've also done some shorter hikes like the John Muir Trail, the lowest to highest route, the Tahoe Rim Trail, the Great Divide Trail.
This is Julie, since there are three women here this morning. I am really interested in knowing how you, both of you, became interested in long-distance hiking, because it's not the most common thing for people to be interested in, and you're both rather young. For you to have accomplished so many hikes, it seems to me you must be full-time hikers, nearly. Liz, why don't you tell us how you came to become this kind of a hiker?
Sure. Well, I started with day hiking, and I really, really enjoyed that. And on a day hike in Yosemite, I was sitting by the store eating a snack and happened to run into some thru-hikers from the PCT, and they were exhausted and tired and mosquito-ridden, and, you know, they were just done with it. And I thought, this is the coolest thing ever. So I've kind of arranged my life, my work schedule, saved up so that I can keep doing this each summer.
Wow. And Naomi, how about you? How did you come to this?
Well, so it was probably in the mid-90s. I was hiking or backpacking with my husband in the Jefferson Wilderness in Oregon, and we met a thru-hiker who was coming through. And he told us what he was doing and said he was hiking 17 miles that day, and I thought, that's impossible. Nobody can hike that many miles in a day. And that planted the seed. Yeah.
And you mentioned your husband, and I think of interest to a lot of listeners who know that my wife and I have hiked the Triple Crown, and very few couples have done that experience as couples.
That's true.
And you're one of them, or you're half of a couple that's done one of them.
Yeah.
So he loves to go on these adventures too.
He does. In fact, he hiked the PCT first in 2006 by himself. And he'd sort of reached a point in his career that he needed a change and finally just decided to do it. And loved it so much. I supported him a lot on that hike, and I got to see through hikers. I got to meet a lot of them. And I knew it was only a matter of time before I could find the time. So, yeah.
So how did you come to hike together? Tell us about your hiking partnership.
Well, we actually met through an organization we're both board members of called the American Long Distance Hiking Association West. And we've met through them. We did a short hike together, the Timberline Trail, which circumnavigates Mount Hood. And last year, Liz came up to me and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about hiking the Great Divide Trail." I'm like, wow, that sounds great. And we just decided it was a great thing for us to try to do together.
And it was a little bit of a gamble, really, because we didn't know each other that well.
It's true.
And it is hard to find someone who's the same speed, has the same goals as you, when you go out for a trip that long, and especially someplace that's a little bit scary, very remote. And it just ended up working out so well for the two of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, you spend a lot of time in each other's company and hiking stuff.
The Pacific Northwest Trail. The Pacific Northwest Trail.
Right. But last summer they hiked the Great Divide Trail.
Yeah, yeah. That was our first hike together was last summer.
I understand.
So the Great Divide Trail starts at Waterton Lakes, right on the U.S.-Canada border, and heads north about 800 or so miles.
Yeah.
Following that Alberta-BC line through Banff and Jasper. So you hit all those classic Canadian Rockies parks and just amazing views.
Stunning. That was very special trail. Yeah, loved it.
And this summer's adventure is the Pacific Northwest Trail. Tell us about the trail.
So the trail starts that same, very similar spot in Glacier National Park up at Chief Mountain and heads all the way to the Pacific Ocean, kind of hugging the U.S.-Canada border for a lot of it.
Yeah, it ends in Olympic National Park right there on the ocean.
So how did you get the idea to go from the one to the other? How did you come up with this as the next adventure for you?
That's a good question. It's another one of those hikes that's kind of almost a fourth hike for people after you've done the big three. And it's also one sort of like the Continental Divide Trail in that it's still in development. There's routes that you can choose, alternates they're called, where there's not just one way to go, which we both really like in that hiking style. And we just thought it was time.
There were a few things for me. It had been on my mind, but Naomi's husband last year hiked it and had a lot of really good things to say for that. So that was one thing in its advantage. The other was that I watched a documentary that was made by a young filmmaker who hiked it last year called A Sense of Direction, and it was just stunning. And some of the photos that I've seen at the American Long Distance Hiking Association West's presentation on the Pacific Northwest Trail, amazing. And also, I had always kind of been a little frightened to do the Pacific Northwest Trail because I'm thinking, this trail's almost all in grizzly country. But after last year going through the Canadian Rockies, I'm not so worried about that anymore. So that made it kind of back on the table for me.
Yeah, the Canadian grizzlies are much more fierce.
Well, Americans taste so good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Pacific Northwest Trail is a fascinating one for a lot of folks. One of the things, it's in our backyard here, or our northern yard, but it also runs east to west, which a lot of the main long-distance trails seem to go north-south. And
yes.
The east to west is a fascinating trip. Tell us a little bit about that. So you're hiking to the ocean.
Yes, which is also an unusual thing. And it also, it's so far, you're sort of, since you're going east to west, you're not following the mountain range. You're sort of going up and over and up and over these mountain ranges over and over. So it's physically, it's been pretty tough, but at the same time, the views and seeing the landscape change has been just amazing.
And additionally, with the trails that run north to south, you're following the season oftentimes, and
that's
an east to west trail, you're not. So how is that different?
Well, we've actually, we've only been hiking since the beginning of August. So the seasons, actually, we are starting to see a little bit of fall color, especially in the huckleberry bushes in the high country. We will definitely get to see some fall colors.
So you've started, for the listeners who are tuning in and for date reference here, about 2 weeks ago, Glacier National Park, and you're fresh off the trail, fetched you yesterday from Bonner's Ferry. About how many miles have you covered?
I think it's about 175, I think.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I measure by smiles, not miles. Yeah.
So how many smiles?
lots of smiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when we find huckleberries.
They are ripe right now in so many places. Have you been finding that they slow your progress as you stop and pick?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, some nice salmon berries, too.
A worthy reason to stop, though. Something else about this trail that's different from the Triple Crown you both completed is that it's not, as you mentioned earlier, it's not really a well-worn trail yet. And how does that make the trip different for you? Are you getting lost or having difficulty along the way?
I think it makes the navigation a little bit like a puzzle. You have to use your brain. You can't just zone out, which I think is a really fun thing to do on a hiking trip.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's one of the things that I really like about trails like this.
And what are your navigational tools? Are you using electronics or how's it going?
We use a combination. We have paper maps, compass. We also have our smartphones have an app called Gaia on it with pre-downloaded topographic maps and some waypoints and tracks. So it's sort of a combination of all of those things.
So you can tell where you are, but this trail in a lot of places, we'll talk a little bit about the status, isn't really a trail yet. So just knowing where you are doesn't necessarily tell you where to go to next.
That's one of the great things I think about this trail is the alternates, and it's at times almost like choose your own adventure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the trail, just stepping back a little bit and let's talk a little bit about the status of it. Right now it's been authorized as the National Scenic Trail by an act of Congress, but the process of implementing the final route selection and management plan are still being studied, and we might come back to that at the end of the show. So for now, there's a route, but it's not all built. Some of it's temporary on roads, and some of it's temporary your imagination. And that sounds like it's part of the fascination, part of the appeal.
Definitely. Yesterday, we had about a mile and a half that was a bushwhack where there was no trail. I got some good scratches, but, you know, it's kind of fun just being out there in the woods, following deer trails. You know, it really makes you feel like you're living in a different century.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too.
And coming up in the next section, there may be some challenges, current closures due to fire on the landscape, and so some suggested reroutes coming forth from the agencies, or are you just strictly on your own?
No, the Pacific Northwest Trail Association has released a suggested reroute, and they released maps, and my husband was kind enough to put it into a Gaia on a route, so we have that as well. It adds maybe 10 miles, so it's not terrible.
So this is his turn to stay at home and provide support
exactly,
for you.
Exactly, exactly. And he loves it.
Is he baking brownies and sending care packages?
I hope so.
And on a trail such as this one, is it more difficult to get your supply pickups? How does that work with a trail that's not been used as much?
So far, it's been pretty good. There's been lots of local businesses that are up in the mountains that have been willing to hold some resupply packages for us. And, you know, of course, we eat a lot of their food while we're getting our packages. Exactly. But, you know, the people have been so friendly, and that means so much to us that they're willing to do that.
And so far, the response from the business owners has been overwhelmingly positive. They have nothing but good things to say about past hikers, so it's great.
Have you experienced a lot of hikers on the trail?
We've met exactly one.
Whoa, one.
Yeah, one, yeah. Other through hiker. And we met him for the first time yesterday.
I think all trails have a certain season. And of course, that varies from individual to individual. But I think the bulk of the hikers going from east to west have probably come through. You're probably behind the herd, as it were.
Yes. I think one of the things that makes this trail so great is it's not like the Pacific Crest or the Appalachian. It's still really long, but students can do it during a summer, 1,200 miles or so. And so there's a lot of that traffic of first-time hikers who are coming out here for their first long hike and being able to do it in a reasonable time off.
Yeah, a lot of hikers can do it in a 2 to 3 month experience, and that lengthens the possible seasons that you can do it in. You mentioned the maps and the guidebooks from the Pacific Northwest Trail Association. Tell us more about some of the planning tools and how they compare to other trails, planning tools that you've used.
Well, like some other trails, there is a town guide trail that will tell us where we can find food or a clinic or a gear store. And, you know, sometimes we'll be a couple stops away from a gear store and have to just make do with some broken gear.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also a guidebook written by Tim Youngluth, which is fantastic. It's updated every year. It has verbal descriptions of the trail, which I really like. So I've enjoyed using that as well.
And there's a map set available.
Yes. Pacific Northwest Trail Association just came out with a map set this year, which is wonderful.
And if all else fails, you can look at your compass and know that you're hiking west, and eventually you're going to hit that ocean.
It's there.
It's fail-safe. Yeah.
Which brings me to a question. Why east to west? Is it always walked that way?
I would say a big chunk of most of the people go east to west just because Olympic National Park tends to keep snow a little bit longer. So people who are eastbound often have a big battle right at the beginning with the snow and the fords.
Yeah, conversely, early season snow can fall in Glacier even in September. So if you're going from west to east, you've got a harder stop that comes earlier.
Yeah.
It's a rare bird looking for a challenge that will go the opposite direction.
Yeah, with the right weather, right weather window.
So let's talk about some of the things that have happened to you in the couple of weeks you've been on the trail. Any interesting anecdotes you want to share?
Well, we have seen a mountain lion, which neither of us had seen before. And in fact, it was a mother mountain lion with her cub.
Wow.
Which really scared us.
So we were on a road walk section on a Forest Service road, and I was a little bit ahead, and I see this cute little, it looks like a house cat. And Naomi loves cats, so, you know, I thought it was a harmless little bobcat or something, you know. And I say, Naomi, come, look, it's off in the forest. Maybe you'll be able to see it. And she comes over, and finally we see it behind a tree, and then we look right behind it. And there's Mama.
Oh, my goodness.
So we got out of there pretty quickly.
People ask, did you get a photo of them? No way.
We got out of there.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was exciting.
That is. But no bears. Not yet, bears. Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Mostly just deer and, you know, your usual forest animals.
Mm-hmm. And so you've had a couple town stops. Any interesting places?
Yeah, I would say Yak, Montana was definitely up there as a kind of an old town with, you know, lots of local color and lots of stories. The owners of the Dirty Shame Saloon had lots of stories about Yak and people and hikers and bikers. Yeah, loved it.
It's ripe for a reality TV show.
Yeah.
And I hear they serve a pretty good burger, too.
Yeah.
Were you able to make your way through one?
What about that, Liz?
So the burgers come in quarter pound and half pound. And I figured, I'm a hiker, I'll get the half pound. So I order the Mountain Man, which comes with ham and egg, whatever. You know, I can do that. And as I order it, the server gives me this look like, you know what that is, right? And I'm like, yeah, ham, burger, whatever. So I order it and it's a pound of meat. Oh. I don't think, you know, with all the hiking, I don't think I've ever had a 1 pound burger before. And then it comes with, I don't know, 4 potatoes worth of fries. So I'm seeing this as a challenge. I down that burger. I down that fries. They say you have 20 minutes in order to, until your head realizes that your stomach's full. So I'm just pounding it both hands. And by the time I finished, standing up was quite painful. We were planning on hiking maybe 10 more miles that day, and I was just curled in a ball on the grass for the rest of the day.
You're not the first person to find themselves on the floor of the Dirty Shade. It's the reason it got its name.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, this is radio, so y'all can't see Liz and Naomi, but they're not large women. And so it does seem rather incredible that you managed to finish that off.
The owner of the saloon was quite impressed.
So I'd love to hear a little bit more about some of your gear strategies and, you know, what makes for a successful hike in terms of keeping things light enough to be able to move, yet enough stuff to have the comfort and safety you need.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to interject because I'm watching, again, looking at these two rather diminutive ladies, and I'm seeing that they're wearing really cute little plaid shirts and skirts. What's with the skirts, gals?
So I first started hiking with a skirt back in 2014. A friend of a friend had made these hiking skirts, and I thought, why not give them a try? And they're great. They look stylish when I'm in town. I know my photos are going to look good, which, you know, that's not the most important thing when you're hiking. But the real clincher for me was that it has pockets. It has four pockets. And so many women's outdoors clothes don't have that. So I always have my maps, my lip balm, my sunscreen. It's so convenient.
Yeah. And what I like about it, too, is that it doesn't break my stride the way pants or shorts can. My stride feels more natural with a skirt than it does with any other article of clothing, which I wasn't expecting, but I really, really like that.
And they're not just for women, are they?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We have male friends that wear them and wear them quite well.
And what they really like about them is the airflow. It's kind of the hiking kilt idea, which used to be quite popular. You know, you can't beat it.
Yeah,
it's a great theory. I haven't tried it yet, unless you include that pair of shorts that the trots blew out. But I'll have to try that someday. It sounds quite worthwhile. Tell us a little more about your packs and what you pack and how much it weighs and what you use for gear.
So I'd say we're both pretty on the lightweight, ultralight spectrum. And one of the reasons is if you're out for a couple months, thousands of miles, it starts to get quite tedious on your knees and your joints if you're carrying something that's heavier. So you're able to go lighter. By going lighter, you can cover more miles each day. Your body hurts less.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. I totally agree with that. It makes such a difference, even for your feet. I used to have a lot of foot problems on my first PCT hike because I just was carrying too much weight, and it was really hard on my feet.
So how do you accomplish that? What's lightweight? What are you using that would be considered really light?
Well, we're sharing a tent, and it's a single wall tent made out of Cuban fiber, or it's called something else now. But it weighs 17 ounces, so it's extremely light. It doesn't have poles. It uses hiking poles that you're carrying anyway, and that's what you use to prop it up. And then it has 6 or 8 stakes, depending on whether or not it's raining. So that's an example of something that's really light that used to weigh 3, 4, 5 pounds.
We're using sleeping quilts. So they're like a sleeping bag, except the back is open, which has been really great on hot days because we just roll over and have a little bit more airflow. But since it doesn't have a back, that's almost half the weight of a normal sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if it's really cold, it has straps that you can tighten it in and keeps the drafts out and keeps your body heat in.
Mm-hmm. And are you sleeping warm? Are there cold nights and you've been comfortable?
So far, the nights have been really warm, like waking up sweating warm. But I think it's been an unusually hot summer out here, from what I understand.
It has been, but the quilts can work quite effectively even in cooler weather.
You open it up and you can stick your leg out and get ventilation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we used this system last year in the Canadian Rockies where it was very cold at the end of September, and it worked like a charm.
Yeah.
And I've looked at your packs themselves are pretty lightweight these days. There's a lot of good pack manufacturers doing some innovative stuff. How much do they weigh empty?
I'd say mine is right around a pound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine I think is, 20 ounces, I'd say, a little more than a pound.
So your gear weight, without food and water, what are you shooting for?
I'm shooting for below 10 for this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I am carrying a little extra weight because we're in grizzly country. I am carrying bear spray, mm-hmm. Bear hang rope, that kind of stuff that adds weight. Mm-hmm. And a bear bag to keep mm-hmm. bears out of your food.
Yeah, all really good precautions.
Yeah.
And on this trip, how often are you having to resupply for food?
It really depends. It can be anywhere from 2 days. I think our longest carry is going to be 7 to 8 days through the Pusaitan Wilderness in Washington. So, yeah, that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah. Just don't count on the huckleberries being ripe, you know, plan for enough food. A lot of bushwhacking. You mentioned bushwhacking earlier, a fair amount on the trip.
It's been a little bit all over the place. Some of the trails have some more brush along the side than others. but so far there hasn't been too much.
Yeah. There's an infamous section coming up with a big bushwhack, so.
I know, I've been in it. I won't tell you what you have to look forward to. I'll let you experience it.
Lovely, but, yeah.
Well, it's been a fabulous trail, and I know you don't necessarily know what's lying ahead on it. That's part of the sense of adventure. Do you have any inkling what you might do next summer? What comes up after this for you?
Well, my husband and I are kicking around a few ideas. There's some things like the Sierra High Route or the Wind River High Route we've talked about. What else? Maybe some hikes in Europe even. Maybe the Camino de Santiago. Yeah.
I'm thinking about doing another east-west route called the Grand Enchantment Trail down in the desert.
Mm-hmm. And would that be during a different time of the year?
I think that's a
yeah. not August.
Not August. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's a spring or fall hike.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm interested because unlike Phil, Liz, and Naomi, I'm an occasional hiker. So I'll hike for a week, maybe do some backpacking. And it seems to me that the Pacific Northwest Trail might not want to be my first long trail if I were considering one. It just sounds like it might be a bigger challenge than something like the AT or the Pacific Crest Trail, where the route is known and there are a lot of people that you would end up running into. What are your opinions?
You know, we might have different opinions on this, so I'll just speak for myself here. I think, it sounds like you've done quite, you have great backcountry skills, and I think that would be enough to go out there. A lot of first-timers are making the Pacific Northwest Trail their first, and that adds to the adventure, but you'll have a great story.
So true.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
dive in, Julie. Just Weird. Dive in.
Yeah. Phil, there will be 25 morning shows I won't be able to make next summer.
We better pre-record more. So let's turn from the Pacific Northwest Trail to the larger trail community in general. Okay. And both of you mentioned All the West. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about the organization and how you're involved.
Sure. So All the West stands for the American Long Distance Hiking Association, West. That we have a kind of a sister organization on the East Coast. And we're a fellowship of long distance hikers, those who are interested in long distance hiking, and those who support long distance hikers.
Yeah. We're both board members currently. And Liz is actually the vice president.
And what is the term? How long will you be doing that?
I have one more year as vice president, and then I have to decide whether to run again.
And my term is up this fall.
Are you going to run again?
I think I am.
Yes. There you go.
It's a really great organization. One of the things that's hard, I think, for first-time hikers is really knowing who to go to for accurate information, how they can feel involved or part of a community. And I think when you're breaking into something as long and difficult, you have a lot of questions. The internet is helpful, but when it comes down to it, being able to talk to a real person just means so, so much in that initial planning stage.
And so tell us how All the West does that. How do they give the opportunities for people to talk real time?
We have four right now, rucks, which happen in the early spring. A ruck is the German word for backpack, and it's pretty much a going out to the trail, here's what you need to know sort of clinic. And we have panels, we look at your gear, we talk about nutrition and safety, all sorts of really great ways to get to know, remind yourself what it's like to be backpacking. It's a long winter, and it's just a great place for fellowship as well.
I mean, we've had a Coeur d'Alene ruck for the last three winters, and it's been very well attended. I know I've helped to set it up, and Julie, you've gone to a few. And
yes, I have, and my husband Daniel has also. It's really it's sort of a motivating experience, and you do in every case you learn some new piece of information that helps you think about hiking better, faster,
definitely
less painfully.
I think the other thing that's difficult too when you're first going on a hike is, people will think you're crazy, like, this has never been done before. What are you thinking going out, leaving your job for a while? And to just be in a room with so many other people who have gone through that same process is really inspiring.
Right.
And something that's interesting about it is that it's all age ranges, backgrounds. It's, you know, you might expect it would be a certain type of person, and it really is not that. It's an eye-opening day, a ruck is. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Another thing we do is we have trail breakout sessions where we have, you know, if you want to hike the John Muir Trail next year, for example, everybody gets together in the corner and they talk about it with somebody who had just completed the John Muir Trail, and you ask questions and talk about food resupply and that kind of stuff. And I find those really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm. In addition to the rucks, All the West does an annual gathering in the fall, which is focused a lot on camaraderie amongst existing or previous hikers. And that's always a fun time. Tell us a little more about it.
So each year we have four speakers who talk about different adventures. And these are, you know, world-class adventures that are told by people who have just gone out and done something amazing. So this year we have someone who's speaking about pack rafting and hiking the length of the Yukon. And I hesitate to say little girl, but she's a very small woman who went out there solo and
by herself.
It's just an amazing, inspirational story. Unbelievable.
And coming from your perspective, Liz, little girl must really be small. No, there are amazing athletic feats being done by hikers and paddlers, and really it's not dependent on size, physical structure. A lot of it's the heart and the mind, the will.
Yes.
Truly inspirational things. I've always enjoyed the gatherings that I've gone to, and a lot of fun every fall. It's something worthwhile. Can you give us the website address for All the West to find out more information?
Sure. It's www.aldha. Did I miss an L there?
No. Nope,
west.org.
And of course, Google knows all. If you just type in the numbers, even if you misspell it, they'll retype it for you.
Yes, they will.
Yeah. There are some other organizations very worthwhile. And I know, Liz, you're in the process of getting an appointment to one of those. That's the technical term is FACA, but we'd call it an advisory committee for the Pacific Northwest Trail to finish off the final route selection and implement the master plan for managing the trail. And hopefully you'll be on that committee soon, bringing a thru-hiker's perspective to the process.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really great opportunity. You know, there's people from all sorts of organizations and different regions, and being able to offer that thru-hiker's perspective of having gone out there and walked this long trail and thoughts about routing, I think is going to add to that perspective.
Mm-hmm. So advice for wannabe thru-hikers in general, and then we'll get back to advice for some of the specific trails.
Taking it one day at a time, not letting little things beat you down, taking it slow.
And seeking advice. I'll put in another plug for the rucks. I mm-hmm. think they are an invaluable resource to meet, you know, hundreds of people with great experience who can help you with things that may seem minor, but in the end can be a big deal.
It's a community, and as you tap into that community, you meet people that can give you advice along the way.
That's right. Yes. And it seems to me taking care of yourself and staying healthy has got to be essential.
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely.
Yeah. So much of hiking is mental, and to go out there and see people who some don't look like they're in that great of shape, but their head is screwed on right.
Mm-hmm.
And that really makes such a difference.
Yeah.
So any advice for folks wanting to hike the Pacific Northwest Trail specific to that experience so far?
Getting the maps and doing planning in advance, I think, helps make the decisions on this trip a little bit easier.
Definitely. But you also have to be prepared to make changes on the fly, such as the fire reroute that we're talking mm-hmm. about. It's adding 10 miles. Don't need to add a whole lot of extra food for that, but that kind of stuff does happen. So you have to be willing to roll with changes like that.
Being flexible, having good maps.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's not smoke. Sometimes it's snow. So you never know what's going right. to get thrown
yeah.
at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or water.
Right.
Right. Where do y'all see the future of the PNT? It's not complete. Does it seem like it'll be a short process, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the PNT just celebrated their 40th anniversary this year. So it's already not a short process.
Good point.
Yeah. But I think with the popularity of long distance hiking and backpacking right now, that sort of energy is going to help propel the PNT.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any advice for other trails? Some of the popular ones people are interested in our area are the Pacific Crest Trail and the Continental Divide. Also the Appalachian Trail. Any quick hints on any of those three?
Well, Pacific Crest Trail, get your permits early. There is a permit process that can be competitive.
Yeah, I understand they're even opening that up earlier this year, I think on November 1st.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that
really
early.
Really early.
And people don't normally start until the next spring, right?
Right. Right. That's I think their thought process there is that people are quitting their jobs and giving up their leases, so they need that.
They need the certainty, period of time to plan.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Appalachian Trail, it's going to be a lot of up and down. You think those mountains out east are small? That not when you go up and down every one of them.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, the Continental Divide Trail, where do you start?
Oh,
and that's the question. Where do you start?
Embrace the brutality.
Yeah, oh, dear. That's not where I start.
That is a trail that very few people do for their first time. And so as they enter the thru-hiking community, they hear of others doing it. And you know you're a thru-hiker if you've heard and embraced the phrase, embrace the brutality.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about this year on the Pacific Crest Trail? There's been so much snow and water, and it's really been rather dangerous at times for people.
Yeah, it's been a tough year. There's even been a couple women who have died in the Sierra in river and stream crossings. Mm-hmm. My advice with, especially in the Sierra and fording dangerous creeks like that, is to go in a group and find people that you can rely on.
Because it's very unusual for people to be killed on a long distance trail. I mean, it's kind of unheard of.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is one of the safest outdoor activities you can do. Extreme outdoor activities you can do.
It is important to exercise some good judgment and caution and be well trained and prepared. And going in a group is very important.
Yeah, know your limitations.
Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid if you come to something you can't quite do to stop and wait for conditions to get better or find an alternative route or even turn back.
Yeah, find another place to cross. Yeah. Not, you don't always have to cross the stream where the trail crosses. You can find a safer place up or downstream.
I think being flexible too. One of the things that's hard about long distance hiking is if you've given up your job and your lease and all these things, you think you have to finish this year. And sometimes maybe coming back next year is a good idea, or going to another part of the trail where the conditions are better.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like flexibility is very much key.
Well, we're running a bit out of time for this interview. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I would say go out and visit the PNT. It's close by, it's beautiful, and you can get just a little bit of a taste of what it's like to go out for a long time. And if you like it, go do it for a long time.
Yeah. Good advice.
Found Sandpoint to be a great rest stop, when you get to the Pacific Ocean, get on Amtrak, come on back through here, and we'll interview you about the second part of your journey.
Love it here. It's a great town.
Anyway, thank you both for coming in. And we-